Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. As you may know, our crew took its regular hiatus in July, but now we're back, and we thank you for joining us again today on Hometown Alaska. Our topic today is military veterans and the important and sometimes difficult transition they make from the military back into civilian life. As troops withdraw from conflicts around the world, they continue to filter back into our civilian life here in Anchorage and all around Alaska. So what does that mean for a vet? Most likely it means a new job, maybe a trip back to the university for a degree or a work certification, and it can mean new friends and a new place to live and lots of change. In the case of combat veterans, it can mean adjusting to a life that is much more relaxed, safer, and slower than what they've grown used to. For civilians, we have things to realize as well. Knowing there are vets among us at work, at school, in the neighborhood, or at church, what role do we play in their transition? How should we behave when we realize someone has served? Is it okay to be curious, to ask about their wartime experience? If you're a veteran making this transition from military to civilian life, we'd love to hear from you. What's working for you? What surprises have you encountered? And for community members, employers, landlords, friends, neighbors, how have your interactions with returning veterans gone? What questions do you have about appropriate reactions to their service? Now, those are a lot of big questions, but we happen to have some great experts in the studio with us today, all with certain areas of expertise. I'd like to introduce them. Hi, Sue Findley, a counselor specializing in veterans issues.
Thanks for having me.
Really happy to have you here, Sue. John Johnson, who works with veterans returning to school. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you too, John. And James Kirkland of the Veterans Administration, who focuses on employment opportunities for veterans.
It's great to be here, Kathleen.
So welcome to you all. And just because I know a big part of our audience is veterans, I do want to ask people what their experience is and how they have this expertise. So let's start with you, Sue. How did you develop some expertise in counseling veterans?
Well, I worked at the Veterans Administration for 2.5 years. I was a OEF-OIF, which is Returning Veteran Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom, combat stress specialist, and did that for several years with the VA before I entered private practice.
Excellent. And John, you're over at on the campus at UAA. What's your background with the military, and what are you doing over at UAA?
Well, so I'm prior active duty Air Force. When I first got off active duty and went back to school full-time myself, while using my own benefits, I worked in the VA office on campus, which kind of exposed me to this whole world. And then a year or so later, my wife and I, who my wife is still on active duty, we PCS'd to Germany, where I ran field offices for the University of Maryland. So more exposure to military
and higher
VA
education
benefits, correct.
And now, did you fly in the Air Force, or what did you do in the Air Force?
No, I was an aerial porter. I ran basically aerial port operations, everything from cargo to personnel to vehicles transporting in and out of where I was located, or downrange when I was deployed, so flight line operations.
So it really sounds like for students attending the university, you really know what it feels like to be exiting the military and going to school, so that's
absolutely
great. And how about you, James? What's your background, and how did you get focused on employment issues for veterans?
Right now, I'm the Equal Employment Manager for the Alaska VA healthcare system, and I've been serving that capacity for about 4 years. And I've also worked for 4 different federal agencies, so I really enjoyed my work with outreach recruitment to veterans. I serve as a selective placement coordinator, and I also am the chair of the Civil Rights Committee here in the Anchorage area for the Alaska Federal Executive Association. So,
lots of hats in the ring there related to veterans and successful transitions for them. So welcome to you all. I really am thrilled to have you on the show. And I'm excited. I think we've got an audience of veterans. I hope we have an audience of just community members who realize that a lot of veterans choose to stay in Alaska and make this their home. One of the statistics I read is that Alaska has the highest number per capita of veterans in our communities. And so, you know, how is that going? What's that transition like? One of my first questions is, why is it such a big transition? You know, we all go through transitions in life. We get out of high school, we go to college. We are married, maybe we get divorced. I don't know. You know, you have an empty nest. You know, we all go through these transitions. But let's talk about the military military transition and what's special about it. Now, in talking to our guests, they gave me lots of tips on good things to read, and there's a lot out there. I want folks to know we've got a lot of links on our website, so if you get interested in some of these topics today, we've got more that you can drill down on. But let's talk a little bit about these transitions, and let's start with you, Sue, because you're kind of in the social personal adjustment arena. Why is this a big adjustment for the military moving into civilian life? And just cover a couple. You don't have to be comprehensive.
It's a big transition because it is a change in culture. It's a change in mindset. I think it also, depending on whether wanting was in combat or not, that makes it a much bigger transition. It will usually include also not only the work piece of it, but also a personal transition. You're transitioning as a lot of times if you started when you were 18, you get out at 22. Well, age 22 is kind of a time of life of transition. Or if you retire, you're in your in military, you'd be traveling, you know, potentially retiring anywhere from age 40 on up. Retirement is a transition. So you have that general life piece, but then this additional cultural piece that makes it bigger and more difficult to potentially navigate. And then if you add combat to that, that becomes even bigger because that's such an unusual experience.
Right. Now, I forgot to give our phone number out. See, there you go. So how can people call you and ask their questions if I don't give them the number? It's 550-8433. And if you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us at 1-888-353-5752. And we welcome email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I do want to remind our audience that we'll rebroadcast this show tonight at 9 p.m., which is a little change for Hometown Alaska. It used to be 7. Going forward, it's going to be 9. So, okay, I wanted to get a little specific with you. Like, a military lifestyle, I want to confess that I'm the child of a Navy sailor who became a chief, and so I spent my growing up years on bases and sometimes off bases in Guam, Japan, the Philippines, and my dad deployed to the Vietnam War on a ship. He was a troop transport person. And so, you know, I know some of this seems really familiar. Like, I could see how when my dad came home, things were different. And it was stressful, too, because once he had to turn around and go right back. So everybody thought he was coming home, and then it turned out not to be true. But yeah, there was a distance that developed between the kids and the dad, and there was a reliance on the mom who was always present. So those are some of the issues. But other things that I think are important to note are life runs a certain way in the military, right? Everything is fairly organized, and civilian life is a little less organized than that. How is that stressful for people?
Well, my understanding and what veterans always said to me was, you've been in a situation where you know what you're going to do each day. There's probably a standard operating procedure for everything you're going to do. Your career has a trajectory. There's a line of command for whatever it is you're going to do. And you come into, and you all have the same values that you're living. And you come out of the military, people do things differently. There isn't that chain of command. There's a lack of structure. A lot of guys will go in, or guys and gals may go in right after high school. So they go in, they do their 4 years. Those 4 years are pretty formative in terms of independent thinking, making decisions, making that transition. Well, that kind of gets missed a bit in the military because the military, it's much more structured. So when folks get out, they might go to UAA and realize, wow, I can decide what I want to do. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. How do I do this?
You know, what I want to interject here, I remember this is bringing back my family memories of my dad saying to my brother, as he was finishing high school, I think you should go in the military. It'll straighten you out. You know, that idea that you need that structure, that order, and it's a good thing for a young man to have that. I mean, that was my dad's theory. And of course, at the time, my brother was an anti-war activist. It was the Vietnam era. And so it was definitely a culture shift at my house, both sides really not understanding each other very well. But let's shift over to the school. What kinds of things do we notice in this transition when veterans go back to school to get some job certification or maybe start a degree or finish a degree? What kinds of things go on for them?
First off, my father had the same conversation with me. He's an Air Force veteran. And in my late teens, early 20s, you know, you should really think about joining the service. Transitioning out of the service, especially in terms of going back to school, the transition process, first off, you have to take into account that we're talking about a really broad group of individuals.
One size does not fit all.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Basically a subset or a crosscut of our whole society. Primary difference being that each of them were healthy enough to put on the uniform when they entered the service.
Right. It's a pretty big umbrella.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're talking about everywhere from 20 years old, served a couple of years and maybe got injured and medically boarded out, to somebody who served 30 years on active duty and is now coming out just looking for, you know, a second career or something, a hobby that they can use their education benefits to fund.
Yeah, and enjoy life. Yeah.
So when you're talking about the difficulties of transition, obviously those difficulties are going to fluctuate depending on the individual. But some of the recurring themes, loss of camaraderie is huge.
Loss of camaraderie.
Absolutely. While in the service, you develop a kinship or a level of trust with those around you, folks in your unit, guys and gals in your unit, folks that you work with. You develop routines or patterns, and part of those patterns are folks that you can rely on when it comes to the difficult stuff, difficult questions, or when, you know, life throws something at you that you're not quite sure how to handle, you've got somebody there who, you know, has
built-in
your back,
support system,
literally
a
little bit, and figuratively.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's one of the bigger factors that I see, folks just feeling disconnected. And so we strive really hard to help get them plugged back into the university community, first and foremost through our office. We have a military and veteran resource, student resource center. Everyone in there has served in some capacity at some point or is still serving.
And so they know and they feel it, they understand.
Exactly.
It.
And it's really cool to see somebody come in the office who hasn't been around other military members or veterans in a while, and they come in to get a question answered and then end up spending 2 hours in there just jaw-jacking, talking about, you know, people speak the same language. They
it's
understand
a little bit
the
of medicine.
Acronyms.
It's a little
Absolutely.
Medicine, yeah.
And then once those connections are made, it makes it a lot easier to attack the rigidity of some of the parameters that they have to work within for their VA education benefits or their military tuition assistance, whatever benefits it is that we're trying to help them access.
Hoops to jump through.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. there are plenty of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We are getting callers, and I'm just thrilled because you guys, it's so wonderful to have you in the studio so you can answer questions. So I'm going to go ahead and alert folks that we're going to go to the employment piece here. But let's welcome Alex. Hi, Alex. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Good afternoon.
And you've got a question about transition of kids of vets. So let's hear what your question is. We've got some good people here to answer it.
Yes, ma'am. I'm an Army brat myself, and my father has served two tours in different conflicts. And, you know, his first one was in Desert Storm, and I was younger when he came in. But I know some of the questions just as he's continued his military career and he's retired after a number of years, but just some of the questions, it's always kind of a concern of how does one address this, especially when, you know, his MOS was more along the lines of infantry and then moving into other areas of sensitive nature. Just, you know, how do I address that when people ask certain questions that sometimes just seem inappropriate, or they're trying to get to my father's history through me, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that's provided along those lines, especially for children who may not quite understand what it is their father does when he's deployed, or their mother for that fact.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
While they're deployed on assignment.
Interesting question. So who among our team of experts wants to jump in here?
Well, this is James, and at least I can share something that's, I think, a positive development. We have a partnership, a school business partnership, the Alaska VA and Bartlett High School. And I have met a DOD liaison that is there and is there to serve the children of veterans. And that is a very powerful program. And so I just wanted to share that, you know, at least with this current generation of veterans, there are more resources. And maybe, Sue, you can comment on that as well. But
so I'm understanding that the question is, what do you tell your children? How do you help your children answer questions from non-family members about what their parents do?
Especially if they didn't really understand it very much themselves, mm-hmm. maybe. So.
Well, I mean, I'm not a child expert. However, I do know that, you know, that's going to depend on the age of the child. And I would think that a child could really answer in a way that is appropriate to their age level. So if a child, you know, my mom's in the Army and she went to Iraq, might be enough for a five-year-old, whereas your teenage kid is going to know, well, she was a Humvee driver and she, you know, served in Afghanistan and may have more details. I think it really depends on the child and what they feel comfortable sharing. I'm going to use that as a little bit of a segue as well and say that a lot of veterans have found that it can be uncomfortable to answer those questions from people. Did you serve in combat? Did you deploy? And I would say I worked with a number of them to find ways to answer that question in ways
they felt okay about.
Yeah, absolutely. Such as maybe saying, you know, that's really personal. I'm not sure I really want to talk about that. I would say for the community that's listening, the way to address that is certainly ask a service member if you want, hey, did you deploy? What did you like about being in the military? And then let that person take the conversation further or not. If you get a really short response about that, I would say leave it alone. That if that person wants to share more about their combat experience, they will. And if they don't, then respect that.
So a little bit of respect. How about you, John? Does that come up? You heard that?
I would think that a conversation with a child would, in a situation where, particularly, you know, if you're talking about like an 11 Bravo, an infantryman, where it's not a job that there's a similar correlating career in the civilian sector, that conversation would maybe look a lot like how you write up a resume when you're coming out of the service, trying to describe the skills and the work that you did in the military and how that correlates into the civilian sector. So maybe focusing on things like the leader of men and women, protecting those that you're charged with.
Some verbs here, you know,
absolutely.
Organizing, protecting.
Absolutely. Mentoring.
Uh-huh.
Those sorts of skills without necessarily focusing on the
nitty-gritty
the operations aspect.
I want to go back to Alex. Is this kind of answering your question, Alex?
You know, it's good to hear the discussion, but yes, essentially just having been put in that position with my father being deployed, and then after he retired, and just kind of that difference between being, you know, 10 and 12 versus being, you know, I'm currently 24 now, and being really uncomfortable with people asking me those questions of, well, where is your father? What is he doing? You know, down to some more juvenile questions of, has he killed anybody yet?
Oh, wow.
So, no, this is good discussion. I really appreciate it.
I hadn't thought about it being sensitive for the children of a service member. And so you brought something forward here that we hadn't actually discussed earlier. I mean, we were definitely going to talk about, you know, how can a community member raise it if they want? Should they even raise it? How can you raise it? It's almost like listening to you, Sue, it's kind of like practicing different verbal strategies, you know, so that you answer the question and it doesn't become bigger than anybody wants it to be, but it gives you time to think.
Absolutely. And I would say certainly that your level of response is going to depend on how the other person responds. If the other person doesn't take the hint, you're going to have to be a little more direct.
Uh-huh.
I would also say you can always say, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would certainly be an acceptable way if you feel like it's prying or you don't want to respond to that, or you could even say, gee, you know, if he's still alive, he could say, maybe you could ask him.
Mm-hmm,
There are different ways to kind of to deflect that politely.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like anything that's personal. It's just that people don't realize that that can be a pretty personal question.
Yeah, that they're not kind of understanding boundaries quite so well. So, Alex, thanks so much for calling. I really appreciate that. That was an interesting twist on something we were talking about. So thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah. And I'd like to welcome one more caller. We have Megan on the line. Hi, Megan.
Hello. How are you?
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. What's your question?
Thank you. Yes. Along the same lines that Alex talked about, I also wanted to share a little bit about military families and get some input on that. My husband has been in the military now for 7 years, and we're stationed here in Alaska. And I'm very fortunate to work for a national nonprofit called Blue Star Families, where we seek to support and empower military families. And along the same lines that Alex was speaking of, I think a lot of times people forget about our military families that are also transitioning with their service members. And, you know, families are reintegrating. They've been apart for many years at times, if not many months. And not only are the children reintegrating into schools, but you have spouses who are looking to reenter the workforce or to change their career field, because as many people know, it's not always a very conducive environment to spouses working. And so you often have two parents, that are making a major transition in their lives, along with trying to support their children. So I'd love if your panel could speak on that and any input that they may have or suggestions for folks out in the community in Alaska.
Okay, so to sum up, the question is about the families making transitions, and that it might include not just the military service member coming out and finding new work, but perhaps a spouse also deciding now's the time to go back to school or adjust my job or my career. Is that what you're getting at, Megan?
Yeah, absolutely, and how the community can help to support those families that are going through such a tremendous transition.
Okay. I've been trying to get to James because his specialty is employment. Would you start with this one, James, especially because we kind of entered it with job shifting going on, but it's also about family support, too. So.
Sure. Well, I enjoy a number of different collaborative relationships with other government entities, and I've truly appreciated hosting a workshop for veterans with disabilities to talk about federal careers, because that's a natural for many servicemen and women who are either retiring or getting out of the military to pursue federal careers. And so oftentimes I'm asked, well, gosh, can we invite, you know, our spouses to come to these workshops? And I say, yes, you know, absolutely. Because when you're looking for employment, for example, it really takes a full team effort. And there is, I think, an appreciation that oftentimes it's going to take a two-spouse income to support a family.
In this day and age and in our economy, yes. Yes, yeah.
So a lot of the strategies that I go over in the workshop are applicable to anybody, frankly, who are interested in federal employment. And that's an advantage of working for an organization like the VA, is that we're nationwide, and you can really have that opportunity for both spouses to, you know, move and transition to different parts of the country or stay right here in Anchorage if you just so happen to be transitioning out of the service and choose to live in this wonderful state.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, John, if you are seeing married couples coming out of the service and going to the university together, kind of that double-barreled transition.
We see that. What I see more frequently that the caller hit on is service members coming in with their spouse, both of them looking to come to school, one of them utilizing maybe their military tuition assistance, the other maybe utilizing some VA education benefits. Maybe they're a veteran themselves and they've gotten out at some point, which is the scenario that my wife and I have been through.
Your wife was a vet.
Mm-hmm. She's active duty still.
She's active duty.
I separated. And I completely concur with the caller's thoughts on the difficulties that arise with service members and their families migrating from one location to the next, PCSing. It is tough, and the spouse typically is having to start over every time that PCS comes along. I've been through those shoes. It's not always, multiple times.
Yeah.
And for children, obviously they're starting over at new schools, trying to make those new friendships. We actually just found out that we're going to be able to stay long term, so my kids will be able to finish school here, which is a first for them.
Yeah,
they'll be in the same school for 3 consecutive years, which is crazy, but a good thing.
Yeah.
But I would say, as far as community plugging into that. I think Anchorage is uniquely equipped. I mean, particularly based on what you mentioned earlier, Kathleen, that we do have per capita the largest concentration of veterans of anywhere in the United States. I can't throw a rock in Anchorage without hitting somebody that I am connected to through some network or another that is somehow affiliated with the military, either their family, a guard or reservist, active duty, veteran, using benefits, something like that. So I think that this community is very aware and very willing and able to assist families who are in those transitionary periods here in Anchorage.
That's great. That's great. Megan, did we kind of cover that for you? And do you represent an organization that we should get on our website for people who are interested? It sounded like you were working with a group that helped families.
Sure, absolutely, yes. I work for a national nonprofit called Blue Star Families, and we support military families both here locally in Anchorage and across the country and the world, really, at all their locations in transitions and moves and deployments and all sorts of things. We have a lot of information about spouses' employment as well on our website. So
Blue Star Families.
Yes, Blue Star Families.
All right.
Absolutely.
And I'm getting a high sign from Sue. She wants to jump in here.
I did. I just wanted to say, Megan, that also I think it's really important to, and for all military families, are to get, if you're having difficulty with the transition or if you're having a deployment too, you're going through that as families, and that tends to be minimized or maybe not acknowledged at all. And so I think it's really important to acknowledge that for yourself and understand, like John said, that it's a big deal and it's difficult. I would say also, and I don't have that information right on me, but the job centers, I know at least the one in Midtown has a veteran specialist. So you could easily plug in there and say, I'm a veteran spouse and I need a veteran specialist, and they can help you find what's available, figure out what skills you have that would be a good match. Mm-hmm. It could be worth checking in with Department of Voc Rehab. It can be a decent source. Mm-hmm. I would also say that for combat veterans, there is also the Veterans Center here in town, which is kind of a subsidiary of the VA. It's like a small VA that was set up back, I want to say back in the Vietnam days or afterward. The veterans came back and said to the VA, we love your services, but we hate your red tape. And so the VA said, okay, we're going to open up these satellite stations, and all you have to do is come in and show us a DD-214, which if you're a veteran, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And if you're a combat vet, you're in. And that also applies to all combat veteran families. And so they can help with employment as well as family counseling, couples counseling, and kids counseling.
It sounds like there's just a lot of safety nets around, and you can be in a state of mind where you don't access them, I guess. But it's not that we don't have them. We have a lot of safety nets. I was reminding when Megan was talking to us, my mom was an RN, and so as my dad moved, she just got a job at the local hospital and was always able to stay employed. And we were always the new kids on the block. That's the other thing as we were growing. And so I think for me, that made me very close to my brothers. We're very tight. Because we were always moving around together. So it's just it's interesting the impacts that it has on you. If you've just joined us, I just want you to know the topic today is our veterans leaving the military, transitioning into civilian life. And we're really looking at it on both sides. You know, what's it like to be that military person separating? And what's it like to be in the community where you have a lot of military people making these transitions? And what's your role in that transition? Just to remind you, we've got Sue Finley, a counselor who works with veterans on all kinds of issues. We have John Johnson, who helps vets go back to school and figure out all that GI paperwork. And then James Kirkland works with the VA but specializes in employment issues. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be back. We hope we hear from you with your questions. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Our topic today is veterans and transitioning from military life to civilian life. Big transition. We talked in the first half hour why that's such a big transition. I'd like to welcome my guests again on the show. We have Sue Findley, a counselor who works with veterans. We have John Johnson, who's helping vets go back to school. And James Kirkland, who works at the Veterans Administration and is really focused on employment opportunities for vets. It wouldn't be fair to tackle. Oh, let me put out our phone number there, too, again, for listeners. We've got people here who can answer questions on all these arenas related to veterans. If you're in Anchorage, give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we do take emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And our show will rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. So let's tackle some of the tougher things that happen when vets come back from a combat zone. You don't have to scratch very far to read about PTSD or mild brain traumatic injuries or even things as maybe seemingly surprising as lots of financial issues, predatory lending or approaches to this community. So there's some vulnerability here. So first of all, is every vet coming back with PTSD? No. But what can we tell the audience about that?
Well, I think one of the things to keep in mind here is this is also where we can broaden the idea of veteran. We've been speaking mostly to OEFIF veterans. Now, I think a broader brush, there are definitely people from Vietnam era and earlier that have some of this going on. And I would say the thing that's important to know about PTSD is it's really a very normal reaction to having been in an abnormal circumstance. And it's important to understand that the first word in that is P for post, because something happened to you first. And I would say by definition, it's kind of just it's a stalling of normal recovery from that. That being said, how it shows up in different people varies. There are certainly common shared experiences, re-experiencing startle response, hyper-arousal, the intense guardedness, kind of things that people do to numb out. All of those are kind of part of those clusters. Mm-hmm. What they look like to different people varies. Like John said, everybody's so different. So mm-hmm. You don't really know what that's going to look like. I think the thing that's really important to understand for people who are listening who may or may not be questioning themselves or have family members who may or may not be exhibiting symptoms that are questionable, if it gets in the way of your functioning day to day, I think it's important to go check it out. Talk to someone. Also on the website, on the Hometown Alaska website, probably the most comprehensive link there is the National Center for PTSD. And that includes all kinds of information for veterans, for families, for employers, and links to other things. There are other different websites that we've also included, but that one's probably the most comprehensive.
If you're going to hit one, hit that one.
Yeah, I would think so. And that will help you begin to get a sense of that. Mm-hmm. I think part of what can be very healing is, at least certainly when I worked with veterans, was when they came in and I was able to normalize what they were experiencing, because there's this underlying fear that, oh no, something is horribly wrong with me.
And then, you know, they may confront people in the community who think, soldier, PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe an employer is thinking, oh boy, what is this going to mean if I hire this person? Are we going to have those issues? I mean, that's pretty tough.
It is absolutely tough. And of course, military culture, and certainly John can probably confirm this, is suck it up and drive on. You know, an army of one. You are completely self-sufficient. Don't be the guy to let down your unit.
Yeah, right.
And so that thought process becomes...
Which is part of the military life that you've been living. You don't want to let anybody down.
Which has served you well, though. I mean, the thing is, that's part of that transition is there are things that you do in the military that are fabulous and kept you and your guys alive and were really useful. And you come into civilian life, and how do you use that skill and plug it in so that it's helpful as opposed to an issue and a problem?
Right.
And so that those things are really good in some areas, but not always good in others.
Oh, I want to, because you're the job piece there, James. We've given you that arena. Do you do any training of employers so they kind of know, they have good information about PTSD, and they don't jump to the conclusion that it's an issue? Because I believe it's a very small percentage of people get tested when they first get out of the service, and I think 6 months later. And sometimes it can... Anyway, I just did a lot of reading, and I don't mean to be comprehensive about it, but I think that idea might surface quickly for an employer or when they first meet a veteran. So how do you counsel employers about that?
Well, I tell you what. We really just had a successful workshop that the Bureau of Land Management invited the VA to help offer to supervisors and managers to really get a better understanding of psychiatric illnesses such as PTSD or traumatic brain injury right now. And that was held a couple of weeks ago. And we have the OIF program coordinators. And by the way, they're structured now. The VA is really a 21st century healthcare model. I mean, we invite families to come on in. In addition to veterans when seeking medical treatment. And so that, I guess they're the folks that followed you, Sue. You know, the program continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll make sure that you've got that contact information, because they're also willing to hold those workshops for other employers in the Anchorage area.
Which is handy to know, yeah. And John, wasn't there some kind of workshop at UAA for faculty and staff?
Absolutely. We implemented a training program we call Seawolf Boot Camp. Catchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's primarily designed to provide training for faculty and staff to raise awareness, just to raise the literacy of the university, the understanding of what, not just PTSD or TBI, but transition issues, mm-hmm. Parameters that these individuals have to work within. But PTSD mm-hmm. and TBI, those sorts of things we do address. And at the university, a lot of this comes down to the willingness of the individual to self-identify or to seek that help in the first place. And a lot of times, like Sue hit on, there's that hesitancy. You don't want to
be known as.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we do have resources in place so that individuals who are working through these types of issues have the means to do so in the classroom. We have through disability support services, if the individual self-identifies and they have, you know, if they need to sit in the corner of the room for, you know, the hypervigilance
their
is really eating
level.
At them, correct? Or if they need extra time for taking tests or whatever the case may be, that can be provided
mm-hmm.
By working through that group within our university.
It's an example of the community accommodating whatever needs surface from veterans. So it's definitely a real thing there then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and I would add to that, the PTSD, it's a problem of avoidance. The catchphrase or the expression is avoidance is the fuel of the fire of PTSD.
Mm.
Avoidance is what keeps it going, which seems counterintuitive. However, that's what keeps it in place. And so, of course, that being a symptom prevents and aid and abets the idea of not asking for additional help.
Interesting. Oh, gosh. You're trying not to draw attention to yourself, and you're prolonging the whole problem by doing it.
Well, and you're in your own mind by diminishing or saying, I'm not going to remember this, or I'm not going to this, and keeping trying to squash that down. only makes it worse. And yeah. I so have to speak to the idea of the deed in disorder. I find that word to be incredibly insulting because anyone who's been through that and is here is not disordered. I would say that the symptoms are disordering.
Disordering. I see. Yeah. Which could help people decide to deal with it. James,
jump in. I'd like to share just for our broader listening audience, too, that the federal government has established a goal of having a 2% workforce comprised of people with severe disabilities, also known as targeted disabilities. And that includes psychiatric illnesses such as PTSD. It also includes folks who may have a missing limb or loss of sight. And I think it's important to know that across the government, including the VA, there's a concerted effort now to reach out to individuals and offer these job opportunities. Because each of us want to be known as a model EEO employer in the communities where we're located. And the VA is very close to reaching that 2%. It's like 1.94. The Alaska VA is approaching it at 1.84. And we're really trying to look at the new hires as well and saying, hey, that should be maybe about 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's reassuring, and I explain that when I have the workshop for veterans with disabilities and help them understand that we're really, really trying to extend that out. And we focus on the ability, so maybe we can talk about that a little bit more. But what veterans have to offer
right.
to employers is just
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah, that's definitely, we can transition to that because I definitely wanted the program to be both the challenges, but really let's take a look at the gifts that veterans bring into our community. We've got a lot of veterans in Alaska choosing this state to be their home. So what are some of the strengths they bring? And I want to throw out the phone numbers one more time for our listeners, 550-8433, 1-888-353-5752 if you're outside of Anchorage, or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we have specialists here. We've got Sue Finley, who is a counselor for vets. And as you can hear in her language, she's used to talking about some of these issues. John Johnson is from UAA and is working very hard with students going back to school. And James Kirkland is really the employment piece here, what the VA is doing to try to employ our vets. So let's start with the gifts. I wanted to make sure we touched on that. And, you know, one of the things Sue and I talked about on the phone before the show was, you know, all you need is a natural disaster and you'll see all this skill set come out in military personnel. So given that we live in the land of earthquakes, it might not be a bad idea that we have so many military folks in our community. But what are some of the other gifts we might look for?
I think a lot of them are just the values, integrity, honesty, endurance. I mean, if you can just get through boot camp, you got some serious endurance. So
yeah.
Just those pieces. Great follow-through, ability to follow instructions, but provide leadership as well, independent thinking. I think one of the larger gifts is just a larger view of the world. That life doesn't become just about Alaska or your neighborhood, that you can really see the big picture.
Mm, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that really is a huge asset.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go down the line here and hear what do you think at the university setting do we see? I mean, I imagine there's some leadership things that happen among veterans, kind of watching out for each other.
And... Absolutely. And I would echo most of what Sue said there. The leadership component is huge. We see that in, we have a student veterans organization on campus, the Student Veterans of UAA. The leadership that's been involved with that organization, I mean, they're just hard chargers, to borrow from a military term.
Uh-huh.
They see a task in front of them and overtake it, you know, no hesitation, no reluctance. Make things happen quickly and efficiently in spite of having all sorts of other things going on in life,
mm-hmm.
parenthood, work, school, mm-hmm. but still take on these other tasks without any hesitation mm-hmm. or complaint.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a maturity.
Absolutely.
A lot of maturity.
You know, and that's part of, I think, one frustration that a lot of veterans, I want to say my guys, had was they're doers. Let me go do this. Let's just take this down. Let's do this. And the rest of society doesn't always operate like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's talk about it first.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk
let's
about
have a committee
and
or whatever. And that's really frustrating. And also waiting for, you know, John was talking about guys getting their benefits together and what have you and how that all takes time. And that can be very, very frustrating. So that is also a big transition piece.
Yeah.
Is getting used to, you know,
the pace of things.
Yes.
Yeah. How about in the employment world, what are some of the benefits that employers can look for in veterans?
Well, I have gone out to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and participated in a program. It's called the Transition Assistance Program. And that is for servicemen and women who are nearing retirement or nearing outplacement. And I've served on employer panels there. And I've done exactly that. I've reminded them of the gifts that they have. And they mentioned some challenges, and it may seem sort of silly, but like, what am I going to wear as far as clothing? Because they've all been wearing uniforms.
Oh, that's true.
And so, you know, that's a good icebreaker. We talk a little bit about that. But I think that there's so many different attributes of just being on time, of being reliable, dedicated to the mission, no matter what organization that they're going to choose to work for, mm-hmm. and really looking at those potential employers and identifying their values of whatever organization they want to work for. And the values of military service, oh my gosh, serving our nation, mm-hmm. are just so honorable. And it's just really good to...
Apple pie and the American flag. It's all those things that we've grown up with. Yeah.
That's right. And they're really trained to be leaders, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got those leadership attributes and also their fitness. They're in good shape, you know, mentally and physically. And that really contributes to productivity, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're good workers.
Yeah. That's great. I'm always aspiring to physical fitness myself. So I'll be thinking about our veterans differently now, thinking, yeah, that's right. They are in shape, right? So let's see. I did want to bring up women veterans because that's a big issue. And I know we've got some things to contribute here. I know there's emerging news stories about sexual assault in the military that's still coming out. Are you counseling people here on that, Sue?
I do. And I would say that women, first of all, an interesting piece of information is there are an equal number of women as men who are assaulted, sexually assaulted in the military. So while the women are getting the press right now and in the headlines, it's equal. It's 40. The latest statistic that I got is 44,000 women, 44,000 men.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. This is it. So what I would say is in general, really, there's an added component being in the military when you've been assaulted. Again, kind of goes back to what we talked about, there's stigma attached to getting help. There's don't want to be that person, want to hold up and be there for the unit. So those components become an issue. As far as performance, I don't think it affects anyone's ability to perform any more than anybody else's, a civilian assault would.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly people compensate. That's what you do in the military, is part of the skill set is compensating. And so the women who have been through that have already learned to compensate and walk through it and are bringing that level mm-hmm. of ability to cope and deal to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So they really have a lot to bring to the table, and I wouldn't say that really they're any different.
Mm-hmm. I know when I was reading up on this just to get ready for the show, I found some amazing statistics about just the level of sexual assault in American culture in general. It's very, very high. They looked at college campuses, 20% of these were women they were talking to at the time, you know, said they'd been assaulted. And it just goes on and on. There's a lot. There's a high level of it in our culture anyway. And so I guess it isn't a surprise that we would see it in the military, which is just another subset of our culture.
Well, and how it is dealt with legally in the military is in the process of being changed. That right now it's the commander who the punishment depends on the mission. So it's potentially more subjective as opposed to in civilian world where it's more prescribed and carefully defined. And the military is in the process of changing that. But that also, I think, may be why statistics are coming out and things are shifting and changing in terms of awareness.
Did we just start reporting it, or is there a sudden crisis on our hands, which is a common problem when we start to look at things? I wonder, does it surface in the university environment at all? Do you hear students talking about it?
Not very regularly. It's not an issue that's brought to my...
How about women vets in general? Do you see them coming back to the university?
Oh, absolutely. Probably in larger proportions than male veterans.
Is that right?
Yeah, or at least an even distribution. The leadership for our student veterans club that I mentioned, for the last 2 years, we had a female president and a female vice president, both uber capable, and again, balancing family, work, school, and these extra tasks that fell on them and their leadership roles.
Pretty darn impressive group.
I would credit Nicole Tovar, who was the president, I credit her regularly for helping make our resource center come to fruition, you know, as a customer of the university and a leader of a group of customers in that university, being able to apply that pressure, which she was very willing to do, helped make the university better equip themselves to work with this student body.
That's great. And I want to go to you too, James. What would you say about women veterans seeking employment, and how's that looking?
Well, I'll tell you what, I really enjoy participating in our new employee orientation every 2 weeks. And that's one of my stock questions for incoming employees is, guess what the quickest growing segment of veterans is? And indeed, it's veterans who are women. And so we've got a successful women's program, Cinnamon Bovee, who hosts at least two, if not three, different women's retreats, women veterans retreats, which are very successful, teaching everything like interviewing skills, basic survival, you know, coping with the stresses that they have to face. And as far as employment goes, I'd say the workshops that I hold are usually about 50-50%, 50% men and 50% women. So
So it's really it's an integrated world out there. We've got men and women. They've served, and now they're back in civilian life together and looking for a good place in life. We've got a caller, so let's got to bring this person on. Hi, Glenn. You're talking to Hometown Alaska.
Yes, I'm calling from the campus of UAA. I'm calling really wearing three hats. Most importantly, I work for the Alaska National Guard as a personal financial counselor for the state of Alaska. But I'm also an adjunct finance professor at UAA and a frequent volunteer and certainly a fan of KSKA. So,
well, we welcome you on the air then.
This program was sort of made for me to make a comment on. I can kind of not help myself. So the comment I wanted to make is there's a lot of attention, I think, due to the media on PTSD and the so-called wounded warriors. The areas I deal in, which is helping people with financial issues, both good and bad, really have nothing to do with deployment, reintegration, or anything else. It's just that Americans are brain dead about how to handle their money.
And, I second that.
I mean, I teach BA 131, which is a personal finance class, and how I can give three or four Fs every semester is just beyond me. But due to the political climate nationally, we've just been notified my position is being eliminated this time next year. One of the head of the chaplain's unit for the Air Guard side was just released via email this week, effective in October. And there's a mythology happening in Congress, and I guess this is the ultimate motive for the call. Please, if you know our congressional delegation and Sean Parnell and so on, you know, I think we'll be fine in Alaska. I'm trying to get a full-time professorship at the university anyway, so it's not a big deal. But since I've been in the business, which is a longer time than I'll admit on air, somewhere around 80% of all divorce is directly caused by financial issues, and this has nothing to do with military. This is the American people. And we don't have a statistic on the number of suicides and domestic violence and substance abuse problems and all of those kind of things that are caused by money issues, but the anecdotal evidence would suggest that it's around 40%. So my dad was up here just a few weeks ago, and he, you know, had the nerve to actually ask the question of the folks at the Wounded Warrior Transition Battalion that was referred to in the last segment, you know, what's the overutilization rate? And he basically had to diplomatically say, you know, what are you talking about? There is no overutilization here.
So what do you mean exactly by that? I'm sorry. What do you mean by over?
Well, the politicians and the right wing in particular like to sniff about, well, when I got out of World War II, there was nobody there. And my dad's a World War II vet, a fighter pilot. And, you know, the point is we figured it out. Well,
In other words, no need for these services?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a bunch of left-wing liberal pandying, you know, to a bunch of malingerers who don't really have these trumped-up diseases and all of this stuff, which, you know, if you live in my world 8 hours a day, you know that that's absolutely untrue. And what's interesting is I learned recently, according to the local military one source guy who used to be the commander of NORAD here, he says the worst social problems that we get are the soldiers that are deployed. They're all MPs who are deployed to Guantanamo Bay. Far worse than the combat zones because, you know, they're there for a year at a time and they kind of get to know these people who are being, you know, held on no charges at all. And they get to see firsthand, you know, where's the American legal system that's supposed to be there. And it messes them up. And so, you know, two prongs of my call, you know, I want to make sure these programs get saved. I think, you know, here in Alaska, if nothing else, the state will step up and make sure these resources are available. But I also wanted to reach out to everyone eligible for my services, which is pretty much any veterans. I even work at NORAD, for example, do financial plans for Canadian airmen who are serving in the NORAD program. I don't have any boundaries as who I take care of.
So you just want you want these programs to be supported?
I want them to be supported, but I also want them to be utilized because some days I feel like I'm the best kept secret in the state of Alaska.
Okay.
And,
yeah. So we should get your information on our website. Maybe after the show I'll contact you and we'll make sure that people know how to reach you.
I'll do better. I'm about 3 minutes away from the studio. I'll come on over there.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Glenn. We certainly touched on the idea that veterans can have some financial issues and they can even be preyed upon by people who are trying to take advantage of that. So thanks so much for your call. I really appreciate it.
For taking it.
Yeah. Well, we've just got a couple minutes. And so I thought, did you have something on your mind, James? You were going to leap in?
Well, I did. And that's just, it's not a secret, but I did want to share with everybody that when I do outreach recruitment and I tell veterans that the VA loves hiring veterans, that's really an honest and straightforward statement because as of this July, the VA across the nation, almost a third of our workforce were veterans, 32%. And here in Alaska, we're approaching 40% of our workforce as veterans.
Yeah.
So I think that's really encouraging for the audience to hear and acknowledge.
And there we are. We're out of time. Thanks so much to our guests and to our listeners and callers. It was a great show. I'd like to thank Sue Findlay, a social worker specializing in veterans issues, John Johnson from UAA working with veterans returning to college, and James Kirkland with the VA healthcare system. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be back as your host on Hometown Alaska, interviewing the Anchorage School District Superintendent Ed Graff just before school starts. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.